Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing: share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdravstvuyte. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, bonjour. In Spain, hola. In Italy, ciao. In Egypt, ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, akwaba. In Nigeria, peleo. In South Africa, sawbona. In Senegal, nangadef. In Kenya, jambo. In Israel, shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Saudi Arabia, assalamu alaikum. Greetings, and may peace be upon you all.
Tune in to Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green on Thursdays at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time and 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time to hear great topics and stories on grief and turn it into victory. Join Dr. Debbie Green to listen to stories of triumph and learn how to overcome. You are not alone in your life, and there is hope in the darkest hour. This is your time to learn strategies and solutions to improve your life. It's your time. So join Dr. Debbie Green with Soulful Solutions and call in on Thursday at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time and 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time at 515-605-9325 with comments and questions. Look to hear from you real soon.
Grand Rising, and thank you all for joining us on this Thursday edition of the Female Solution Global Radio TV Show. I'm Naima Latif, your co-host, and we'll be joining Dr. Debbie Green to take a look at an issue that is quite common in many families. Do you find yourself always being the rescuer in your family? Do you feel responsible for family members who have personal life issues? Do you have adult children whom are still depending solely upon you? Are you feeling guilty due to a failed marriage and blame yourself for things out of your control? If you answer yes to one or more of these questions, you are suffering from guilt codependency syndrome. In society today, 7 out of 10 families have a member in their family in this dysfunctional role, causing anger, frustration, shame, toxic guilt, leading to depression, anxiety, stress-related issues, and severe cases such as suicidal murder-side. Join Dr. Debbie Green to discuss the issue in full and learn of the symptomatics and repercussions of the dysfunctional lifestyle. Now, as you listen to this, you're probably pulling in mind your your own person in your family that is chronically dysfunctional, that never seem to got themselves together. And if you are someone who's been the one who always comes to the rescue, you've been primed to be the enabler, the one who always steps in when someone else reaches rock bottom. However, this one person in the family can create dysfunction for everybody else's family. The one who shows up on your doorstep and once again they've been evicted, and you have to bring them in, and bringing them into your home means bringing in all the drama related to their lives. You subject them to your children if you are an adult with a relationship and children you're trying to raise, and perhaps you have that sibling who never could get themselves together. Or maybe you, if you have raised children but there was a divorce, and maybe one or some of the children took it very hard and could never quite overcome the devastation, and so you feel compelled to keep helping them go through that period of becoming an adult, and they never quite became the adult. Well, of course, when there is a family breakup, it does affect children differently depending on the age at which the breakup happened. And sometimes children remain at that emotional age where they were when the breakup happened. So if they were 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and there was a divorce, and it was emotionally traumatizing, they may have stayed stuck at that age where they experienced the trauma. And so you find yourself still taking care of a 5-year-old even though they're 35. It happens. And yet, if you remain in that state of dysfunction, you will find yourself perpetually taking care of someone who needs to reach inside themselves and pull themselves up. That's what this life is about. Whatever challenges we're facing, these are the challenges we need to face in order for our soul's evolution. So Dr. Debbie Green is joining us now to bring us some wisdom. Grand Rising, Dr. Debbie Green.
Grand Rising. Hello, hello, everyone. How are you? How are you doing?
I'm fantastic. Oh, well, yeah, you're always right on time.
Yes, 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 ma'am, yes, ma'am. What's a wonderful day here in Atlanta, a little overcast. I think we'll get a little green. I call it liquid sunshine.
Liquid sunshine,
just a little,
there you go.
Yeah, liquid sunshine, just a little wow. Yeah, we got a great lineup today. Again, you know, just really, so much going on at one time. You know, when I come and I pick my topics of discussion, I'm like, okay, what's really going on behind the scenes, you know, behind the scenes of life, you know, what's really happening. And due to me, actually, where I work, you know, in my career, I see things so up close and personal. So, you know, it's just an opportunity to share, you know, to share, you know, and to help prevent a lot of things if we could definitely focus on those things. So our topic today is a very interesting topic because everyone does this. It's just that the thing about this is it's the extreme of frequency that they do it in.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So how do we deal with family drama without feeling guilty?
Well, you know,
you
that's
know,
the
sometimes
thing.
Sometimes we've got to be in it, but we don't always have to be in it.
And we could have been conditioned from childhood to be the one who always tries to keep things together. And this happens, you find this, I'm sure you see this a lot, in children of alcoholic parents, where the parents are dysfunctional. And so you learn to try to keep things together among dysfunctional adults. And if you're maybe that older child or you know, the child that that has to keep some type of order in a dysfunctional household with adults who are dysfunctional, it's almost like you've been conditioned to be that person to try to manage the drama, and so you find yourself following that pattern for the rest of your life.
Absolutely. And that's just when it comes to substance and addiction. And then you have so many other areas of narcissism. You have codependency, which begins to put a person in a position where they feel they can't leave or feel they're obligated to leave, or feeling that they have to hold on or keep mothering or either fathering a child, you know,
even
a sibling.
Yeah.
Even a sibling. I've seen siblings hold on to each other and not let them live their lives because they're so codependent and dysfunctional.
Yeah.
You know, when I suffer, I want you to suffer too. Where is that written? What kind of law is that?
Well, you know,
you know?
I think people feel, it depends on what they were told while they were raised, that they're responsible for someone. And we were talking right at the beginning of the show about there tends to always be one in the family who didn't quite grow up, and everybody knows that that's the one who can't get themselves together. They show up on your doorstep once again. They've been kicked out of their apartment for whatever reason, and you take them into your home, but then they create dysfunction for your entire household. You know, that sibling who maybe that sibling was the one who didn't quite overcome, maybe there was a divorce, and they were the one that took it hardest, and they just never were able to recover, never able to grow up emotionally beyond the age they were when it happened, and so they just never were able to get it together, and somehow their life becomes everybody else's responsibility to fix, and you can't fix someone who's broken. They have to fix themselves. But maybe you just always feel obligated to step in and help anyway, and it's just it creates dysfunction for your own life.
It does, it does, and you know, and we do it out of love. See, the thing about this is when the families get the most traumatized is when they don't know how to handle a difficult family member any longer.
Yeah.
So what they do, they you know, because that family member might have burnt their bridges with.
Yeah.
With their extended family, with the other family, because this person is dysfunctional. And I'm sure at some point, because we were all children at some point, they did not repair themselves. Because people have said, we have to do damage control daily.
Yeah.
Damage control has to be done daily. And the damage control is just what it is. You ask yourself, where in your life, habits, actions, responses, reactions, action, behavior, feelings, thinking, all of those things, where in your life is it non-productive?
Mm.
You know? And when you do that on a daily basis, you say, well, Dr. Dan, why you got to do it every day? Because you're going to miss something if you don't, because we change from day to day.
Yeah.
And we are impacted from day to day by some kind of circumstance, some kind of situation, consequence, or repercussion. It doesn't matter what it is. And I'm not saying you're always experiencing negativity, but the thing about the human mind, Naima, it grates more than the negative and the positive. You're not. It's an 80-20 rule. So if you're not filtering, you could hear something on a television screen or whatever that would trigger you. You see what I'm saying? And the reason why they're triggered is because you have unsettled areas in your being that you have been ignoring, you have been denying, or maybe you're totally unaware of. So the thing about this, we all came from a family, did we not?
Yes.
All right?
We all came from a family.
You have some of those family members that, you, like you said, they just seem like they can't, you know, balance out, be productive, take care of themselves, be mindful of their being, you know, not do the things that they know is self-destructive. That's because they have not rescued themselves and they don't have no self-awareness. And because a lot of them have been caught in this cycle of recycling of the same habits over and over and over again, now the mind, the subconscious mind is leading the life, not the conscious mind.
So the conscious
mind can make decisions all the time.
So how do you differentiate between acting with love and compassion and enabling that person to continue their dysfunction? Because like you say, sometimes people feel guilt if they don't step in and help. And yet if they do help, they don't stop the pattern of behavior. And I think of a lot of people who may be homeless. And every time I see a homeless person, I think, well, where's their family? Why is their family not helping them? And usually there's a reason. There's something in their behavior that makes it difficult for people to live with them. And, you know, I used to be very judgmental of people's families who did not help them when they became homeless. And I think, well, what kind of a family would let you be out here in the cold like this? Or what kind of a family wouldn't, you know, at least offer a couch to sleep on in it's wintertime? But there are things that person may be going through, whether it's, you know, mental illness or just erratic behavior, that helping them wouldn't help them. So, but then, of course, if you're compelled to help someone and they don't stop whatever it is that caused them to be at this state of dysfunction in their lives, how do you not feel guilty? How do you know when what you're doing is helpful, and how do you know when not helping would be harmful?
Well, again, most people don't. And when you see, let me tell you something. A lot, it's many factors why a person will become homeless. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Some people just prefer not to be around the family,
yeah.
Or they may not have the support of the family,
yeah.
Or maybe they may have areas where they don't think that nobody cares about them. They could also have a mental illness and, you know, go out into that area as well. So there's many, many factors. A lot of times what happens is that some of those people have burnt their bridges. They have, you know, been given, you know, opportunities to come in, and they end up from habits or behaviors that the family members may no longer deal with them because of their dysfunctionality. You see what I'm saying? They may have been argumentative. They might have had bad habits such as taking things that don't belong to them. They may, you know, it's a lot of different reasons why a person would not be there for another individual. And it also depends on how this person is thinking of themselves as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do I think of myself? Do I think that I'm not worthy of somebody's love? So maybe I'm self-sabotaging. Maybe I feel that I'm a failure, so I don't need to be around anyone. Even though everybody's trying to reach out to me, you know what I'm saying? I don't feel I'm worthy of their love.
Mm.
So that's another reason why a person would just remove themselves. So when we talk about family drama and family violence, it's like, you know, again, it starts off as something that looks so normal, but then it turns into something, you know, abnormal. You know, so, you know, what went wrong in the family? What happened? You know, we could blame society. You know, if a lot of times most people point the finger at somebody else. But, you know, what is a family? First of all, let's start there. What does a family consist of? Most of the time we think it's a mother, father, you know, and a child, you know, or with extended family, as brothers and sisters, uncles, aunts, you know, grandmothers, and all these people, okay, they're combined to be a family. But a family can also be a nuclear family, Naima. Nuclear family is not biological. You see what I'm saying? Well, people that come together with the same like and interest, you know, the same mindset, and then start to create a family. And we've seen that too. It could be a person that did not have any family at all. Maybe they were an only child. All of their family may be, you know, deceased. So now they marry another person that has an extended family. Now that person is a nuclear family to these other people. So look at it as a whole. So the thing about it is the family is supposed to love, be supportive, and trust each other. But unfortunately, that's not the case in our society today. What they're doing, they're destroying each other.
Yeah.
So that's when it gets very, very hard and horrendous to accept. You know, what happened? How can one person, two people, how many people will get so angry, so disgruntled, so full of hate, where they want to destroy their own family.
Well, you know, one time I observed a family of a friend of mine. The mother had somehow pitted all of the siblings against themselves with kind of a competition kind of a thing, like, well, she's smarter than you, or she's prettier than you, or, you know, just somehow all the siblings grew up enemies of each other. And then when the mother passed away, they were all still enemies. And, you know, this one hating that one, you know, will, you know, mom paid for his college and didn't pay for mine, or, you know, all this kind of thing. So one of them, you know, got into some trouble, needed help, I think became ill. And nobody would take that person into their home. And so the person lost their home. And I was feeling kind of bad because I'm, you know, listening to my friend explain the drama of how their family grew up and how there was all this acrimony between all of the siblings. And no one felt compelled to help the one sibling that was going through an illness, lost his apartment, marriage fell apart. Well, I don't think he ever married the woman who was mother of his children, and they broke up, and he ended up, you know, out on the streets and was struggling to try to get into some kind of a nursing home. And I was just observing as an outsider, but, you know, my thought was, how does a person create such dysfunction among siblings who are going to grow up and be adults? And I think about that movie Soul Food when, you know, the mother, the matriarch, was saying, we got to be like a fist, you know, we stick together, you know, like one hand. And I looked at this family,
right,
and saw that it was just the opposite in the way they had been raised. And I'm wondering if that's something generational, whereas you don't learn the principles of unity as a family, and so you don't know how to create it in your own children, and so they don't know how to create it in their children. And I was even observing what was happening, even the generation of those who were enemies of themselves, their children were not friends to each other, and their children were kind of in a competitive kind of relationship. And I'm thinking, this has got to be something learned, where you don't learn how to create a functional family. And so your children don't learn how to create a functional family, so their children don't learn how to create a functional family. So how do we recognize and stop a pattern if we've come from that kind of family where people didn't know how to be family? And they didn't pull together to help each other. If we didn't see it, how can we be it? How can we learn what we weren't taught? Is there a way a person can recognize that what they lived was dysfunction and they need to change something in order to change the pattern?
Absolutely. One of the main factors of what you just said is when the matriarch or the patriarch, which is the mother or the father, have experienced trauma previously to having children.
Mm.
So when they experience trauma from having children, if they have not corrected their correct, one thing about it is you got to be aware of trauma in order to do damage control. If you're not aware of it and you're not doing anything, then you're going to continue to recycle and cycle into those same patterns over and over again. And this is what I've seen in families. They've been damaged from some occurrence in their childhood, then that childhood actually inner trauma then comes and actually interrupts and damages their adulthood as well. So what happens is all of that anger, all of that guilt, shame frustration, anxiety, depression, or whatever it is, then actually act out into a pattern of different things towards their children. And then, and if that child that's been exposed does not recognize that this is a dysfunctional lifestyle, if it doesn't recognize that, what happens is that they'll just pass that thing on down. We call that thing generational curses, okay? Generational curses are dysfunctional patterns that have been interrupting the family, what do you call it, tapestry, in all types of different areas, personal, business, financial, economical, all of these areas that's been going on. So what happens is it then creates a living, breathing stressor. You know, now that person that is dealing with it, you know, if they don't recognize what it is, they'll take that same energy and pass down to their children. And that's what you're talking about. That energy just gets passed down until a person realizes it, like, wow, wait a minute, this is just something wrong with this. I need to stop this. I need to do everything I can not to pass this pattern down to my children and their children. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have to be very careful of the patterns that we give our energies to, and then allow ourselves to see the truth and nothing but the truth, because that's the only way we're going to be free from these ongoing damaged areas of other people and other people. So it's amazing how that happens, because the thing about it is all my clients and most of my patients, even at the hospital, have gone through the same processes. I just spoke to one of my clients, a new client I just got. She was saying to me that her sisters, she had two sisters, all of the sisters have lost sons to violence. So
wow.
What do you think about that?
Wow.
All of the sisters, including herself, have lost a child to violence.
That's quite traumatic.
They got shot. They got killed. So, you know, we ask ourselves, yeah, what's going on with that?
Yeah.
How can, you know, well, again, these are things that have been passed down. And, you know, I'm sure if we did a research, now you may look all the way back, even through the mother. You see what I'm saying? I asked her how her mother and her father was and how did they treat her and how they treat each other. They were very dysfunctional. The father was an alcoholic, and every time he drank, he attacked his mother, he attacked his wife and the children.
Mm.
You see what I'm saying? So, again, if we look past him, I guarantee you'll see the same pattern. So what's really going on in the world? We are being affected by generational curses. We'll be affected by generational energies that if you're not paying attention, if you're not doing something, you can deny it. You can act like it's not there. You're going to pass that thing down into your descendants, into your descendants. And that's the reason why a lot of people right now are just really festering at the highest levels of anger, frustration, anxiety, and even mental illness. Because mental illness is also something that's passed down. Alcoholism, substance abuse, addiction is a gene. Alcohol is a gene behind that. That's a dysfunction. That is also passed down. So look what, I'm going to tell you what's happening. The damage behind this. We have damaged adult children. Damage adult children. The damaged lives of the child's life is now living through the adult life.
Mm. I think that is so significant that we're addressing this, because as I listen to everybody talk about the distress over violence and pointing fingers of blame at everybody outside of themselves, the violence we're experiencing is coming out of the homes. And it's
Correct.
Coming out of the people in the homes, because it's happening in the homes. And that's where it originates. So all of the arguments we've heard of, you know, the police and gang violence and all of this, first the violence happens inside the individual. And it's a reaction to the experience of violence in the home. And I know a lot of people would feel better if they could blame some outside force or some outside group. But really, where does the anger originate? And if you can experience something, but it only moves you to rage if there was already rage inside of you. And where was that rage first planted? So there are a lot of families where you would not be able to tell what's going on in the household, where maybe the father and mother are fighting and there's alcoholism and there's violence and there's extreme fear and the children are being beaten and all of these things going on. They're watching their parents in these violent episodes. But maybe nobody can realize that's happening because, oh, everybody's got a good job and, you know, the lawn is well kept. You don't know what's going on in that house. So when behavior happens among the children, everybody's looking at somewhere else to blame. But when you've got patterns where everybody's child somehow gets involved with, you know, a violent encounter or, you know, a violent situation and ends up shot and dead, and I am not blaming the victim. I'm saying that there really are no victims. We create the conditions that we experience by the energy that we're carrying. And if we cannot be honest about our dysfunctional families, we cannot fix the problem at the root where it first originated, in the home. And
exactly.
I'm not saying that, you know,
exactly.
It never happens where the, you know, the nice college student, honor student doesn't get shot and that sort of thing. But where is that? What happened to that person who brought the violence? You know, where did that originate from? So when it's happening somewhere, it ends up spreading everywhere. And we got to fix it where it's broken, in the
Absolutely.
Home.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I think
That's where it begins.
And mm-hmm. we got to take a break. But, of course, we want you all to call in, 515-605-9325, and press 1 when you're ready to speak, because all of us are affected by the dysfunction, even when it's personal family dysfunction. That family brings its dysfunction out of the house and into the rest of the world, and we experience it, and that's what we're experiencing now. And if you're on our switchboard now and have a thought you'd like to share, press 1. We'll open your mic. So we'll be right back.
And you're on YouTube.
Absolutely.
Please like our and subscribe to our channel. Thank you so much.
Like and subscribe at Soulful Solutions on YouTube. And like and share on Facebook, Soulful Solutions. And if you'd like to join us visually, go to Soulful Solutions on Facebook or YouTube. And, of course, write in your comments and we can share them with our listening and viewing audience. And we'll be right back after this quick break. So stay with us.
Have you ever dreamed of going to exotic places, meeting fascinating people, enjoying uplifting music, and spending nights in a luxurious hotel? Do you look forward to a relaxing vacation where you can walk along the beach or sit in a quiet park and enjoy the sunset or sunrise? Whether you're flying around the world or driving across the country, we will share travel tips that will help you stay safe while you enjoy the journey. Join me every third Saturday of the month, 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, and move around with Deborah here on the Female Solutions Show. Call in and comment, 515-605-9325, and press 1 to speak.
Hey, it's time to take charge of your health. I'm Viata, your holistic life coach, and every Friday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, I'm here on The Female Solution to empower you to make choices that will assist your evolution to abundant health. I'm also blogging every Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. at Soul Purpose Healing, where I bring you a spiritual chiropractic adjustment to bring you back into alignment with our Creator's love, compassion, and wisdom. Join me every Friday morning at 8 a.m. and Sunday evening at 8 p.m. for a time of unity, enlightenment, and love vibration. Shalom.
What if you could live to be 120 years old and remain active, healthy, alert, and vibrant? Our bodies are made up of cells that are constantly rejuvenating. So if we take proper care of ourselves, we can literally defy aging. Join us every Tuesday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time to learn about self, cell care from Susan Essentials on the Female Solution Blog Talk Radio Show. Learn how to help your body and your cells feel rejuvenated each day through proper nutrition, sleep, frequency medicine, and many unconventional methods of self-care. I'm Jody Susan. Join me and my amazing guests by calling in at 515-605-9325 and press 1 to speak. We'll help you achieve a breakthrough in your health today.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back to Soulful Solutions. My name is Dr. Debbie Green, and with my wonderful co-host, Naima Latif, our executive producer of The Female Solution. And again, our topic today is how do we deal with family drama without guilty emotions? But most of all, how do we deal with family violence? I mean, that we are experiencing on the highest levels, under gun violence. Gun violence with family violence right now is at its highest level it's ever been. It actually, from 2020, it actually raised from, it was like 19% up to 37% of gun violence. And that's just gun violence. That doesn't have anything to do with the domestic areas, because domestic violence is not just with a woman and a man. It is with family as well. We got family domestic violence. So, again, these particular, you know, areas of our systems, you know, we are experiencing. And the thing about this is, I think it was everything can look at themselves, you know, independently and repair. I think that's when life could be much better. But again, no one's watching.
Yes.
No one's watching themselves, and they only thinking of the have nots, not the have. Like, you know, I don't have this. Nobody loves me. Nobody cares about me. You know, all of the have nots. All of the dysfunction, again, we gravitate mentally 80-20, 80% negatively, 20% positively. It doesn't shock me that the brain would do that. It's because the thing about this is, it's not that hate is greater than love, because it's not. It is just not, what I'm saying is, it's so much with the frustration and the agitation. Until people, again, train themselves and their nervous systems to keep responding off of the same thing. They recycle over and over again. Like a person that will sit there and worry about something. They'll worry about and obsess about and ruminate about, and then they become that thing that they dread the most.
Yeah.
You know, because they're overindulged into it. So, you know, the goal is to have an understanding. Okay, what am I doing in my life? You know, how am I treating my children? You know, what am I giving out to the world? You know, is there something I need to be aware of? And I'm not saying it's all one person's fault. No, this is a world thing. This is a people thing. You know.
Well, everybody contributes something. So the thing is to know what part am I playing in this family drama, because
yeah.
You know, we might be that person who's creating the drama just by being the one who maybe you know, spreads the gossip or talks about people behind their back or gets people upset at somebody. But did you know so-and-so said this about you? Or did you know so-and-so did that? And so we might be the person who stirs up the problem. And I've observed that as well. Sometimes you can have one person in a group of people, and their mere presence can create dysfunction because of the way they are. They're constantly going back and forth between people and you know, telling tales and gossiping and getting people angry at each other. And it's them. They're the cause of everybody else's conflict because that's just how they've learned how to be. Maybe that's how they learn how to be in their family, to keep mess going, as they say.
Yes.
Some people are like that.
Yes.
So, yeah, look at this. Are you that person who does that? You know, so, and I've had that situation where I had to confront someone in a group of us, and they were that person. And I said, well, why are you always, you know, being two-faced, you know, saying this to this person, this to that person? Well, I just like to speak my mind. I think people should know the truth. And I think
dysfunctional.
Yeah.
No, they're dysfunctional.
Yeah, how is that helpful, you know?
When it comes to a man is dysfunctional and a woman is defective when it comes to those areas. Because, again, no one should want drama in their lives.
Yeah.
Because if they got drama in their lives, that's all they're going to do is speak drama.
Yeah.
But because they got drama in their, inside of them, drama, which means fear.
So what makes people enjoy that? What makes people seem to enjoy that, where they like creating conflict between people, and it's like they are not satisfied unless there's drama going on? What is it inside of a person that makes them keep creating that, wherever they are?
Well, one of those things, which is the main thing, they don't have no peace of mind, okay? A person that has a peaceful mind will not create anything unpeaceful. So, again, whatever's inside of them, it comes out of their heart and through their mouth. That's how it works. So, I mean, think about it. You have one individual that, you know, happy-go-lucky, that just every time you see them, they're good people, you know what I'm saying? They do the best they can to live a productive life. You know, they're not out here trying to backstab, hurt anybody. But then you got another person that, you know, that appears to be productive and okay, but then they got these underlying areas, you know what I'm saying, mentally, that they get to struggle easily. They have low temperaments, you know what I'm saying? They constantly complain about life. Nothing's right. Everything is wrong. Okay, what's the difference between these two people? One has some awareness and one does not.
One has
you know
peace of mind
and awareness
one does
you're
not.
Bringing.
Yeah,
one has some awareness, and, you know, they have awareness. Because if you got to know what this being is giving out to the world. So if you don't know that you're dysfunctional, you're just going to stay dysfunctional.
Right.
And you say, well, are they doing it on purpose? A lot of times, they're not. They really don't know what they're doing. They've been so comfortable in doing it to the point where it's just life for them. You know what I'm saying? It's life. It's from the, because something happened in this person's life when they were younger, then it continued on, then it turned toxic, and now here we go with a dysfunctional person.
Is it possible that a person may never know what it feels like to be functional, so they're not aware that their behavior is dysfunctional because that's all they have known?
Yes, it's very possible, Naima, that somebody can just grow old and be very grumpy.
And that's who they've been their whole lives. I see it all the time.
I've had people, yes. I have people come to me 70, 80 years old. I don't even know what happiness is. I've never been happy.
Yeah. And that's a sad
thing. I don't know
thing.
What that means. It, I don't it, know what that feels
never
like.
Felt joy.
I've never
peace.
Been happy.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. And the thing about this is when you see a person like that, you're like, wait a minute, didn't you have a birthday party? Wasn't somebody, did somebody tell you that you're good enough? I mean, but apparently this person has been experiencing all of this negative energy on and on and over and over and over and over again to the point where they literally got programmed that they will never be happy. So when something does come, come to them that's trying to make them happy, not make them, but an introduction to happiness, or contentment, or to joy, or to peace, or some kind of wonderful feeling, they're like, I don't know what that is.
They still turn it into
so they're not
unhappy.
Well, not on, yeah, but they can't turn it into anything. They just self-sabotage. They don't acknowledge it because they never felt it before. So they're not aware of it versus a person who is aware of some type of joy in their life. You're aware of some type of joy in your life. So now you're like, okay, this is all right, even though I've been through this. Okay, let's look at that. Let's look at the person who might have been through the changes over and over and over and over again, but they still have joy in their life. They still are making the best decisions to have a good life instead of saying, woe is me. So look at it this way. What's the difference between that person and the person that constantly just wants to be bitter and say they're still victimized? The person that's bitter is still victimized to their situations, to their experiences.
So now
they have not come out completely. You can come out completely and redevelop and recreate a whole nother life. Or you can stay in the victim role. You stay in the victim role, all you're doing is, again, recycling in the same thought patterns over and over again. And people can hear you say the same thing over and over again.
Over and over again.
Oh, so-and-so-and-so. They never loved me. They ain't never been good.
Always.
So-and-so-and-so. They never. We hear it. Because all they're doing is cycling in their mind of damaged subconscious thoughts. That's all it is. Consciously, they're not even awake, Naima.
So when we're raising our children,
walking around, damaged.
You know, I see patterns in families a lot. So when we're raising our children, aren't we setting a pattern for them by what they're experiencing growing up? Like you mentioned, you know, haven't you ever had joy, you know, a birthday party, something? When parents, maybe because of their own dysfunction, only use criticism and anger as a response to a child, aren't they setting that child on a path of dysfunction because they truly don't have a memory of ever being at peace, being in a state of joy, being accepted? They don't have a memory of that because the parents, maybe because of whatever parenting philosophy they have, maybe they were very harsh, very demanding, very critical, and so they literally never created any joy in the household. There was maybe always fear of punishment or fear of ridicule, and so maybe this person as a child never really experienced what joy feels like, what it feels like to be calm and peaceful. Maybe they always had that anxiety because there was always criticism. There was always fear of violence that's going to happen either between the parents or from the parents to the children, that kind of household. So doesn't that set a person on a path of recreating that in their lives unless they recognize that that's what has happened to them?
Right, and we call that the inner child syndrome. Yes, it's an inner child trauma. Okay, again, you know that's what that is. But through the inner child trauma, if a person is not aware that they are still living these lives, living this thought, living this action through their adult life, then they're going to continue to live that. You see what I'm saying? That's why one should examine oneself daily. You got. If there's any trauma, and if whoever is listening to this or looking at this podcast, if you find yourself constantly, you know, feeling that you are a victim to life, you really need to look at your inner child trauma. And if you're not aware of that, please be aware. I mean, leave me a message or something so I can help you. Because what happens is you're going to continue to live again. You're going to continue to live those patterns in your adult life. And we call that damaged adult children. Because that's what it is, right? And the thing about it is you don't know it because you've been so used to doing it. You're so used to feeling it. So you think that's the way you're supposed to be. That's the way your life should be. But that's not so. It's not. You can have a life full of joy. You can have a life through good relationships that's not damaged. You can have a life through helping you to rear your children if you have any, so that you don't pass that down to your children. You see what I'm saying? Because that's what happens. And everyone can't handle that. Some people get extremely warped mentally behind someone else's trauma.
Mm.
They don't know how to handle it. They become self-inflicted wounds, which is that they start to turn on themselves, you know? And when you start turning on yourself, you self-defeat, you self-sabotage, and you slowly self-destruct. That's what suicide ideation comes from.
Mm.
You see what I'm saying? When you get to that lowest area in your being where you don't want to live any longer because you're in so much pain, because you're looking at life as, you know, oh, I can't do this. I can't do that. You made school for your children. You know, say all of these and put a job. Some people are adults and still being bullied by their loved ones.
Yeah.
Okay, we need to talk about that again. No, I'm serious. It's so toxic, Naima. That's why I said it's like a continuance. It's a continuance of things that happens over and over again. So, you know, we go into those areas. So the reflex or the result, as I would say, when this does get to its highest level of severity, again, that's when people start self-destructing. And when they self-destruct, they want to take people with them.
Yes.
They don't like doing it alone. These days, they don't do it alone all the time.
Yes. I'm going to take myself out and everybody else who I know, everybody else who's around me. But now, this is what I've...
Yeah, they don't do it alone.
This is what I've observed when it comes to people not realizing that there is severe dysfunction. We tend to define someone who is successful and stable as someone who's making a certain amount of money and has a certain material possessions. So if someone has bought a home and bought a nice car and maybe has a job that is well paying, we tend to see that as signs of stability, and other people tend to see it as signs that they are stable because of the financial acquisitions that they have. But they don't recognize when the behavior within their own personal circle, their family, friends, is dysfunctional simply because financially they're able to buy things. And so they feel like, well, I'm okay. You know, I have a house, I have a car. You know, and so they don't address the behavioral issues that are dysfunctional and hurting people around them, whether they have a violent temper, whether they are abusing substances. I mean, they don't see it because of the cover of the trappings that this society has decided is a sign that you're okay. Oh, well, you live in a nice place, you're driving a nice car, you're fine.
Well,
so how does a person recognize that that isn't it? That doesn't mean you're okay just because you got a house and a car. If inside that house is hell all the time and everybody coming out of that house is reacting to trauma because of what's going on in the house, how does a person recognize that there is a problem just because the finances are okay? How does a person realize, you know, like, what are signs when your household is a mess, even though physically it looks like everything's fine.
Well, you know, that's what I'm saying is that's just tangible stuff, you know, but that don't have anything to do with the people that are living in the home, you know, as far as, you know, their actions, their behaviors, because dysfunction doesn't have respect to a person. It can be in the White House. It can be on anywhere, celebrities. We've seen dysfunctions everywhere, so it doesn't matter. You will know when things start to fall apart because it's going to hit the news.
Yeah.
That's when you know. And you say, wait a minute, they look so nice. They came from this.
They look nice.
No, everybody was quiet, but just because things are silent, that doesn't mean that they're not chaotic.
Mm, all silence is not peace.
No, it's not. No, it's not. Not at all. Not at all. And, again, it's one of those things that people hide mostly.
Yes.
People hide dysfunctions.
I find that a lot of times
they
children
hide.
Grow up with
yes.
with being told that don't tell our family business, or don't tell our business, or don't put your business in the street. You know, when there are a lot of secrets in a family, you know, things happen, and you learn not to speak, and so nobody ever gets any help. Because how many times do we see in the news something happens, you know, somebody kills themselves and the whole family, and everybody's shocked, like, but how could that have happened? They were such a nice family. And no one knew the hell that was going on in that house because the children had learned how to hide it. And, you know, there's no signs of it. The house is well kept on the outside, so you don't know.
It doesn't have anything to do with that. Mm-mm.
You know.
Nothing. It does not have anything to do with status.
Yeah.
This germ, this bacteria, it bleeds away in every area of life. We all have lived a lifetime story, okay? And I'm talking about the movie, right? Everyone has had some type of lifetime movie. And we go back and we look, we can see it. It's very clear, you know, it's very clear that everyone has lived some type of trauma in their life. If a person tells you, oh, no, I had a perfect family. I've never experienced that. Now, my mother and father never did. Oh, no, you just didn't see it. But it was there.
Yeah.
It was there.
Every human being has something.
It's normal. It's normal to have some type of dysfunction in your life because nothing is perfect. You see what I'm saying? So, again, we must learn from these things and not be these things. That's what the purpose is for. You learn from them. See, a lot of people are still being them. That's what happens. So they pass down, like I said, like a baton. They pass it down in actions and behaviors and thoughts.
Yeah.
They pass it down. And now when they realize, oh, why my child is doing this or why my child is doing that? Because you passed the buck. You passed the buck. So who's to blame? This was a baby in the womb. Who was to blame? And, you know, we ask ourselves that, you know, should we blame our ancestors? So we bring our dysfunctional ancestors, even all the way back, you know, to slavery time, you know, from all the way down, because we all arrived here from someone. There's no such thing if you think you just arrived here off of you was a bad. What was you? How did your mother and their mother and their mother and their mother? No, you arrived here from someone. Someone lived on this earth that you may live now, okay?
So what?
And
what
they
you,
all had their own
down?
Dysfunction.
Yes.
The only way to see it is examine it. You look at your life. Look at your life independently before you even had kids. And you say, look at your parents' lives and your grandmother's lives, and you open your eyes and you shall see. You will see it all right there, and it will let you know. And you say, maybe you may even know some of the patterns that you may have picked up, because we've all picked up patterns. And it doesn't have to all, some of those patterns are good patterns, and some of those patterns are dysfunctional, and they don't serve you any longer.
Well, that's the thing. People don't know the difference. We got to take a break, but when we come back, I want to give you a list, a couple of things that people experience And you can tell me, you can tell me each thing if that is normal and healthy behavior in a household, or is it dysfunctional?
Because
there are a lot of things that we do just because it's been passed down, and we think that's normal, and we think that we're okay, and we're not. So we'll talk about it with Dr. Deb when we come back. And if you're on our switchboard now, you've got a question, feel free to press 1. We'll come to you and open your mic and get your thoughts. And we will be right back after this break, so stay with us.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif. Join me and my co-host Kareem Hamid every Wednesday morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. on the Female Solution Radio Show as we explore that relationship that is the foundation for our society, the relationship between men and women, husbands and wives. Join our discussion as we seek to repair broken family ties and rebuild our community. Listen online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. Call in and comment 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak to our host. Or you can join us live on Facebook at www.facebook.com/the-female-solution.
Need to be whooped for things on a regular basis. most children have a lot of intellect. It's all about how you approach them, you know. Any child that's been damaged in some type of mental capacity have not been loved properly. And that's when things start to get out of hand, and that person becomes bitter, angry. Now we have what they call a defiant child. And the child is so defiant to the point where it becomes, again, we go back to dysfunction. They become dysfunctional. And so no matter how much you hit them or scream at them, they're just going to be dysfunctional. But they're going
to
become
immune
that.
To that, to the
well, they're going to definitely become immune to it, but then they're going to also think that's the way they have to handle life. Mm. So they pass that down. They scream and yell and become very actively bitter people. Gang violence is one of those things because they didn't feel love in their home. They go into some type of dysfunctionality in society, which is called a gang. And again, gang violence is just what it is. It's destruction. But there's no judgment in gangs. So it makes it easier for a person just to blend in and become strong. That's the way they think. They become strong and notice and get the attention that they need by acts of violence. Mm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it comes from that. It comes from not being loved or coddled, as long as they properly.
Mm.
You know, if you coddle your children too much, you have a problem. But if you don't coddle them enough, you still have an issue. So everything has to have balance. You know, you got to help them with their boundaries. Like if you know your child is having issues with certain areas, it's no use to push them and try to force them to deal with that area, but ask them a question. Well, how can I help you to make this better? You know, I've given you these tasks. And some kids, like, you know, they don't do it because they may be on their phone too long. They may be distracted. And then they get upset when the mom comes or dad comes and say, why haven't you finished that? You know, you've been on that phone, haven't you? Give me the phone. Now they're really mad because if they got a phone addiction, that's really going to make them even angrier. So, you know, there's a good chance they may not do it or create the anxiety behind not having the phone. So it's so many different ways. I mean, like some parents, if they don't monitor their children, some kids are given phones and devices, technical devices early as 5 and 6 years old.
And they become addicted.
Well, the thing about it is when you introduce them to that world, because you have techie families, this is normal.
Yeah.
You know, I have a grandson that this birthday present, his 6-year-old birthday present was a phone. And I told my daughter, why are you giving them phones so early?
Right.
I said, I wouldn't have given them until he was like 12. But see, this is a different change. My daughter didn't get a phone until she was 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? Because at the end of grade school, you know, you want to correspond with them, but you don't want them to be interrupted. And that's what's happening now. The kids are giving these phones too early in life. And because of the technology of the parents, you know, it's technology of the parents now, you know, they don't know they're giving the child a device in their hand. Okay,
right.
They can put parent control on that device, but when that phone starts to become an issue, now you got to put the phone down, but you gave them the phone in the first place.
Right. Well,
so you used to argue about it.
Yeah,
that's why I don't want to say about parents. You're going to give them something, and then you're going to argue about it when you can't take it from them.
Well, you know, anytime you have a tool without the wisdom of how to use it, then it becomes a weapon that ends up being part of your demise. I mean, that's like anything, you know. It's like adults when they're given something that they don't have the capacity to know how to use wisely. You can have a car too soon if you're 16 years old and you don't have self-discipline and you don't have the skills of good judgment and your parents want, you know, okay, you got your license, let me get you a new car. And if you don't have the wisdom that comes along with that device, then it'll destroy you. You know, if you get a motorcycle, you know, you're 16 and wild and trying to impress, you know, girls and all of this and doing things without wisdom, and you're drinking and getting high and you're on your motorcycle, and you end up crashing. And so parents have to have the wisdom of knowing when a child is ready for something, and then taking the time to show them how to use it and the perils of using it wrong, and determining if that child has the maturity to handle this. And if they don't have the maturity, I don't care how mad they get, don't give it to them, because you're not helping, you're hurting. But now right. Here's the next thing. Is this a healthy situation? You have many parents, they feel like they should encourage children to compete with each other in order to make them better. So if you're in a family as a child and your parents made a point to point out when your sibling was better at something than you, and maybe they got better grades, maybe they were better in athletics, and their intention was to try to encourage you to try harder, but maybe these were not your areas of excellence, so you end up feeling bad about yourself. And the more you tried, the more you felt bad, but your parents felt that you just needed to be motivated more, and so they continued to compare you to a sibling that was doing better at something that they wanted you to excel in, and you couldn't. So now you have hostility towards your sibling because you're feeling like they were the favored child because they could do something better than you could do, and that's affecting your self-esteem. But this is the
right.
This is what your parents use to try to motivate you. Is that a normal, healthy environment?
No, it's not. No parents, no nuclear families, grandmothers, aunties, uncles, none of them. If you have more than one sibling in the home, you cannot compare them to each other. You cannot actually have them compete to each other. Each sibling needs to be looked at individually on its own. Each child needs to be looked at on its own and should not be compared. Oh, well, your sister did it, why can't you? That's the worst thing you can say. Or your brother got A's, why you can't get A's? Why you got, no. What you're doing is you're creating a hostile environment between siblings when you do that. A hostile environment, because that person will always pit it themselves. They can always think that you favored someone else over them. And that then starts to create a toxic mental environment. And most people, when they grow up in an environment like that, they always feel not good enough. They always feel less than, that they got to do more than the other person. A lot of them are what they call, you know, career seekers. They go and they be extremely successful, and they pressure themselves to be successful, because they don't always feel like they're good enough. So they go far and beyond. Nobody got to give me nothing. I'm going to get my own. And so it affects their relationships, because their relationships, when they look at people, you know, they always think, well, you think you're better than me. It'll be that. So you can't pit it. Those siblings between each other, that's unhealthy. Each child should have its own life pattern in families. Whether one is slower than the other or faster than the other in academics or how they handle their life, it does not matter. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, the worst thing you could tell a sibling, you need to help your little sister because so-and-so. Then that child always was going to feel responsible for this child. No, parent your children. Mm. You parent your children. You parent your children. A lot of times that's what we do. We take a child and tell a child. I mean, and let me tell you, we got a lot of key kids, okay?
Yeah.
I understand. I had to do that. I was a single parent for a while. You see what I'm saying? For a good while. So I understand that you have to have a lot of key kids. But at the same token, know the difference. You tell, if you're going to have one that's watching over the other, you tell the one that's being watched, I need you to be responsible. I need you to be responsible for your own self. Now, the only reason why I'm leaving her in charge, not because she's older, it's because I put her there. It ain't got nothing to do with whether she's older than you or younger than you. I put her there, and I need you to be responsible for the house, not just for the person in the house, the home. So if you got a 16-year-old, you got maybe an 11 or 7-year-old or whatever, let them have their own life patterns. Don't have the 16-year-old always or the 13-year-old always watching the 2 or 3-year-olds because you're taking away from their life. And, again, you're teaching codependency at the highest levels.
I think that's what happens in a lot of families when, you know, parents have to be gone and you have to put the oldest one in charge. And that oldest one might not really have the wisdom to make the best decisions, but they're made to feel responsible. So now this brings us to our third point, and then we're going to take some calls. And
I also want to talk about molestation, too,
yeah,
in the family. So, okay, I don't know if that's one of your topics.
Well, I'll move that one to the next one.
Molestation.
I'll move that one to the next one.
In the family, the molestation.
So,
yeah.
So let's deal with this one, number three. When there is sexual activity happening in the family, a family member, let's say, an older cousin that comes to visit, and that older cousin has been asked to babysit the younger ones. Maybe that older cousin is 16, 17, and those younger ones are maybe 11, 12, and there is sexual activity that happens. And then somehow they get caught in the act by one of the adults, and the response of the parents is punishment of those who were involved in the sexual activity. Maybe it appeared consensual, but you have maybe an older relative, and the younger ones, you know, the 16, 17-year-old, initiating and in being involved with the 11, 12-year-olds, but then everybody gets punished for naughty behavior instead of it being defined for what it is, which is molestation. So the punishment, you know, whether it's taking away privileges, whipping, whatever the case may be, the idea is you all did something wrong, and that is how that was handled. Is that a normal, healthy response to molestation, and what could be the consequence of responding to it in that manner?
No, it's not. No, it's not. That's not a healthy way of, no, because you're not righting the wrong. You're not right. You're looking at them as a whole. You're not investigating to find out exactly what happened. So when you bring these people back together and this older sibling or cousins or whoever he is continuing molesting these young kids, you're causing major damage mentally and emotionally, you know, maybe even to these children. So, and I had a client that actually did that. I've had them to have, that has happened on more than one occasion with the same type of you know, same group of children or whatever on more than one occasion, and it affected her whole entire life. And every time she would try to tell an adult, you know, this person touched me the wrong way or whatever the case may be, you know, they tried to, you know, they minimized it. Oh, no, you did, you mistaken. That didn't happen. You know what I'm saying? What are you talking about? You know, they didn't even take her seriously. And it went on for a whole year. It went on for a whole year until she thought it was her fault. She said she, because they didn't acknowledge her.
Wow.
She thought it was her fault. She thought she was doing something wrong. And she was, and then the person that was violating her, you know, even up to the point that they started, as they got older, they kept coming around. And every time she would see them every once in a while do a family gathering or something, she immediately suffered PTSD behind
wow.
that.
Wow.
So, no, it's not appropriate. No, it's not right. It is extremely wrong if you're not listening to your children. I don't care if they're 3 years old or 15. You know, listen to your children. Because, again, you are creating dysfunctions if you're not listening. I think as soon as a child should speak 3-4 years old, and I tell my children to tell their children, you tell me if anyone touches you in any area of your body inappropriately, I don't care who it is, you tell me. You tell someone, adult, but you tell me especially, you know, which means tell your parents. And if you got a parent that can't see and can't understand, because brothers have touched sisters,
yes.
They molested each other.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying? This
yes.
is real.
Yeah, I've known families where that's happened.
This is real.
And no
I've seen that. Incest.
Yeah.
Incest. So that being said, don't just think that it's not happening. Examine it. Investigate. Find out. And don't put them all in one place to ask them the question. That's the worst thing you could do.
Right.
Pit it one against the other.
Right.
Do it separately.
Yes.
Take them outside.
Yes.
Outside the family, which means when I say outside the family, which is outside the house, have a stranger, somebody that they don't know, ask them, because they're not going to tell it all the time to people that they know.
Especially
because
they feel
afraid.
Right.
Yeah, they feel
afraid. Punishment or blame, you know.
Yeah, but they might have been threatened by whoever the perpetrator was.
Yeah.
If you tell, you know, I'm going to tell you lied, I'm going to beat you up, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. You don't know what was told. You see what I'm saying? Because we know that this happens. You know, people touch people inappropriately, and they have no rights to their bodies.
Right.
But this is real. So molestation is real. It's real in incest in family. And again, this is damaging. This is damaging when someone experiences this, you know, in an early age. It damages their life. It damages their relationships. A lot of it is not spoke about because families don't address it and has not addressed it for years and years.
Period.
That my uncle, my brother, my father, my mother, you know, touched me and did something to me that was inappropriate. Okay, so what do you think is going to happen to that person? That person is going to grow up with this toxic energy inside of them.
Yeah.
And it's not been handled.
Yeah.
And it's damaging.
Yeah.
It's damaging mentally and emotionally.
Yeah.
And spiritually.
Yeah. Well, we've got several
callers.
Can we
take that phone call?
I'm going to take you all in this order.
Yeah, let's take a phone call.
312-597 and then 312-450 and then 312-671. We'll see how many we get before the break. We start out with 312-597. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your question for Dr. Debbie.
Good morning, ladies. This is Kofi James.
Yes, Kofi. Question for Dr. Debbie regarding family dysfunction, issues you may have observed or experienced. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, you know, so much trauma in the world, but, you know, I grew up as a child, and my mom used to tell me, you know, I'm so spiritual, I'm no earthly good, because I was trying to, you know, I was trying to be right. And I'm lucky I haven't been molested or raped or anything like that, but coming into the world, I noticed that, you know, people have issues and everything, and one of my favorite toys that I always look back to was the, you ever heard of Humpty Dumpty?
Yeah, I remember that, yes.
Well,
yeah.
It comes in pieces.
Right. Right, and you put the pieces back together, yes.
So that's how I look at people. You know, we can complain and talk about all the harm that's been done to whoever, a child, an adult, or whatever. But until we understand what puts those pieces back together, then we just huffing and puffing.
Mm.
Now, what puts those pieces back together is peace.
P-E-A-C-E,
peace.
We can't hear you because you're talking.
Oh, okay.
Well, I said peace. 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 Peace.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have peace, you have everything. And one of the best things you have on this earth is life. You have life. You have life. You find peace, happiness, whatever. We all got issues, but you here. You have life. You have peace. Can't nobody break me down. Can't nobody talk about me. Can't nobody do, because I got, you know what, you know why? Because I have peace in me, inside me, dwelling
yeah,
in me since I was a child. Can't nobody affect me. Can't nobody affect me. And so if whatever you've gone through, seek peace.
Mm. So one last thing before we take the next
that
caller.
That is what we need to be sharing.
Yes.
We can break down. We can break down. Huh?
So, Koopy, before we take the next caller, I got a quick question. Is there anything that you experienced as a child that made you choose to raise your children differently so they could have that inner peace?
Noticing the generational curse that we had, lack of fathers. I was blessed to have twins, a boy and a girl, a male and a female with a virgin. I'm a blessed man, okay? And I'm just living my journey. That's just what happened to me. And I can't even explain it. The joy I have of having a boy and a girl. And so, you know, we have to realize that, you know, you got to just enjoy the ride. You got to enjoy the journey. You know, I'm not more blessed than anybody else, but I'm blessed within myself. And I blame it on my peace. I blame it on my peace.
Glad you're bringing peace. My we're going to take another caller before we get to a break. Thank you so much for bringing peace and sharing the peace that comes as a result of inner peace.
Everybody can recognize peace.
Absolutely.
So that's a good thing.
Absolutely. Area code 312-450, introduce yourself to our listening and viewing audience and give us your question or comment for Dr. Debbie.
Hello. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Okay. God bless you this morning. This is Sister Darva. I just wanted to say to you guys that I was listening to you, and I do, want to say this, that I am the middle child of the family, but most people think I'm the only child or either the baby of the family, the youngest, but I'm the middle child. But I'm the one that brought all the peace. I have six sisters, brothers over me, but I have five underneath me. But I'm the middle child, and yes, and so it was 12 of us, and 12 is a very powerful number. When I look at the Joseph brothers, I'm more like a Joseph. That's what I was in the family. I'm a Joseph. Yeah, I have the spirit of Joseph on me. And so I'm the one that always brought the peace in the family. I'm the one that my aunts and uncles wanted me to live with them. I'm the one that I was sick more than anybody because I got hit by a car at 5 and the devil tried to kill me. But God replaced that with a pastor ended up driving a car that hit me. And so I say that, and that's when I began to, God began to speak with me when I was about 7, because I stayed in a hospital. But that was a way of God showing me that the Holy Spirit was raising me up and training me up instead of my family. But I do look at what you guys are saying, because I got older sisters that said the other older sister I should have went to California, not her. But she was the oldest, so the oldest always have to take care of the family. That's just a tradition with black people. The oldest people, always siblings, always take care of the younger siblings, babysitting, getting them ready and things of that sort. Because I was the middle child, but I have four sisters underneath me. So I am the one that has to take the responsibility of getting them ready for school, teaching them, training them, and grooming them to be who they are. And so the middle child is more like the one that gets overlooked, but the middle child also can be looked upon from the older siblings and the younger siblings. But in my opinion, I was talking about this just the other day, the younger, the baby of the family, because I have dated men that were baby boys, and they were mama boys. The men that I dated or married to, they were a mama boy. So I didn't like that in the marriage because I'm your wife. But it don't matter. The mama is still going to do what they're going to do with their baby boys. I believe that men, girls are more closer to their daddy's little girls really mean a lot, and so do mama boys. And I believe that girls have a better relationship with their father than their mother. And I believe that the sons have a better relationship with their mother instead of the father. I use those scenarios because I've been included in all those, and I know about all those because I have two daughters and two sons, 10 years apart. And older one said, well, Mom, you treated my younger brother and sister, and, you didn't let them get away with a lot of other things. I don't think that we do that. I think that we know that they're young. They're babies to us. They are younger siblings or children. So we know that you're grown now or you're older now, and you might see a difference. And then the age, the time of life is different because you guys were born in the 70s. They were born in the 90s. So you're not going to be the same way. It's a 10-year difference, and that's what people don't understand. But I do see what people are saying, but it does apply to the family or to the mother and father, just like the mother might give the sons more attention than the daughters. And the fathers would do the same. But I do think that some parents might get things confused. And what I say about the parents that allow, that do, like, control their children and when they become adults, I don't like that. I don't like that because some of the men that I dated, their mother would kiss them in their mouth when we would visit their mom. And I was like, oh, no, do I kiss my husband in his mouth? And they would say, but this is my son. I always love my son like that. So some things I don't tolerate, stuff like kissing in the mouth, hugging. Well, not hugging, but kissing and being in, the mother getting involved or the father in the marriages and stuff like that. I don't like that. But as far as all the siblings are concerned, I think that people do need to treat them all the same, as Dr. Debbie was saying, that all of them should not make a difference. None of them. They should all be treated the same. But what I will say is to Dr. Debbie and you other ladies, I don't like blended families. I don't think God wanted blended families. You might not agree and find me a scripture that said it's okay, which it was. But I think blended families, I don't think people would treat their children better than your children or the same, better than other children. I just don't believe in step-parents. I know it happens, but I don't believe because you're not going to treat that person better than your own child. In my opinion, all the same. Now, I may be wrong, but I just don't feel it in my spirit. So I have stepdads and stuff like that, but my family said, my auntie, I'm going to let you go. My auntie said it was nine of them. They said, we all agree as children, if something happened to mom or dad, which is my grandmother, grandfather, we're not going to let no step person come in and raise us. I said, really? She said, all of our nine uncle and auntie said, no other person's going to come in and do what my mother or my father did. They're going to have to stay single until we get grown. I'm like, oh, that's hard.
That's a choice. That's a choice that people make, but I think it depends individually on how you can handle blended families, and everybody has different levels of maturity. Well, Deborah, we got to go to a break, but thank you for sharing. And it's something that you mentioned that I want to address, which is the fourth issue, which has to do with being different in the way you parent the different genders of children. We'll talk about that when we come back from break. Thank you so much, Deborah. We appreciate it. Thank you for sharing. And we'll be right back after this quick break. So stay with us.
Oh, man. God sent the monthly sun bill today. This sunlight is really expensive, especially during this season. I'll probably have to work overtime to pay it.
Well, you better pay it on time. We don't want the sun to go out and we're sitting up here all day in the dark.
Wouldn't it be terrible if God charged us for sunlight? Well, thank God, the light and heat from the sun is free. So why are we paying such high bills for the energy we use in our homes? Because we don't know how to use solar energy, the free energy from the sun. You can convert your regular home to a solar energy home and save tremendously on your electric bill. Take a look at your electric bill. Wouldn't you like to reduce or possibly even eliminate that cost altogether? Let one of our solar consultants show you how. Call today, 312-849-3456, and schedule a free consultation. That's 312-849-3456.
Do you want to live in a world without war? Join our global peace movement. Heavenly Culture World Peace Restoration of Light transcends culture, religion, ideology, and other boundaries to achieve a peaceful harmony in the global society. HWPL is committed to bringing world peace and cessation of war through peaceful dialogue between religious groups. I am Director Shin-Suk Kim of the HWPL Chicago Branch of North America. Join us for our next gathering. Call 773-580-1501 and be a part of the movement for world peace. Email us at chicagohwpl@gmail.com.
We have an opportunity to transform the whole global society in the next 50 years. 50 years from now, the Earth will be populated by a new generation of adults, many of whom are yet unborn. Our mission is to nurture them in childhood with love, guidance, and protection, and to raise them in healthy, happy families. If we impart values of compassion, generosity, and respect for fellow human beings in the next generation of children, they will create a world where people can live together in peace. This is our goal. Be a part of the transformation. Get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. Go to www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com.
With my wonderful co-host, Naima Latif, our executive producer of The Female Solution. All right. You know, I just need to address this really quick. When Darva and also Kofi James that gave a comment, and I truly appreciate both of you for calling in because, you know, everyone has a different view, and I love to hear those views. So the first thing I want to say really quick, dealing with the peace factor that Kofi has, he spoke something very profound. He said his mother said he was there. He said you're too. What did he say? You're so much
spiritual.
Good, you know, earthly
yeah,
good.
Yeah.
And the thing about that is that what they're saying to me is just what she might have saw in him. And I mean, I just again, this is just my opinion. This is not etched in stone. You know, what I'm saying what that was saying that you know you look at it from a different point of view than most people do. Like you say, I have peace. But how is there a person that never experienced peace before? How would they recognize peace? How they always lived in a state of torment or a state of dysfunction or defectiveness or always had someone that, you know, always constantly, you know, just told them what they were not, you know?
Right.
So, you know, again, everyone doesn't have that opportunity to have the peace that surpasses understanding. Yes, it is a choice, sir. I absolutely agree with you. It is a choice. But then even with peace, you've got to have balance. You got to know when there's not so much peaceful days and when there is a peaceful day. You have to have balance even in your peace because no one can have all positives and no negatives. If that was the case, then the battery would be no good to us.
Yeah,
okay, thank you for hearing that. Okay, the second part, I also want to address with Sister Darva. Again, thank you so much for coming on to let us know your views because I think that's very important. that you came from a huge family with the middle child. Middle children are usually the most ones that thrive because you are the one that have to bring balance. That's why God created you in the middle. So that's understood. But, I mean, you also said something I want to also address about nuclear families. Nuclear families such as stepmothers, stepfathers, or whatever the case may be. You know what I'm saying? Because sometimes, to be honest with you, my sister, a stepfather, a stepmother treat a child better than a biological mother or biological father. I've seen that. I've seen it in, you know, in many, many circumstances. I mean, in the whole of things, yes, we as biological families are supposed to treat our children and our loved ones with the best of care, but that's not always the case. So what God does, I just truly believe he will send a ram in the bush, okay? That ram in the bush will come in and love that person just like it's been loving it since it's been born. And, you know, are you even carrying it in his womb? So sometimes things like that do happen, and I just want to kind of reiterate that so that it will have been, you know, benefits and balance for our listeners as well, because you might have been a step person, or a stepmom, or stepdad that might have been listening. And then we don't want anyone to feel judged, right?
Absolutely.
But most of all, anybody that's been living in torment or living with not such a peaceful life thinks that, oh, that peaceful is not something that they can have either. So we want everybody to feel that balance. And again, thank you for tuning in. Can we take that up, call, please? That's the question, didn't you?
Yeah.
You wait a minute.
It was
talking about children, stepchildren.
Right, yeah. Before we take the last caller, families that have male and female children, in a situation where there are sons and daughters and the parents maybe have those views that there are gender roles that they should train their children up in. So for the girl children, they have them learn all the housekeeping, homemaking skills, you know, sweep the floor, make the beds, and they don't teach any of those skills to their sons. So the sons, more or less, you know, maybe the mother picks up after him, makes his bed, cleans up after him, or gets the sisters to clean up after him, but he doesn't learn any of the household management skills because the thought is, well, that's not, you know, boys, he's going to get a wife and she's going to do that, so he doesn't need to know these things. But girls, you need to know how to wash dishes. You need to know how to iron. You need to know how to sweep floors. So when you have a household where the males are not given household management and maintenance skills and the girls are given all the skills and given the responsibilities, is that a normal, healthy environment?
Well, the thing about this is now you are depicting roles when you teach a child that. I think all children, whether male or female, should be taught to clean, should be taught to cook, and do all those roles, because guess what? That's called independence.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so which means that when that person grows up, they're going to take care of themselves. They're not going to look for there anyone to do something for them. And that's believe it or not, that's the reason why some women can't cook and some men can't cook, or their household areas are not as tidy as they should be. It's because they were not taught that in the home. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And even just say, wait a minute, yes, I did teach my kids. They're just lazy. They just don't want to do it. Well, how did you teach them? Did you make it a fun game?
Yeah.
Or did you command it or demand it? If you make it a game, a game is just like this. It comes with a prize, it comes with praise, and it also comes with reward.
Yeah,
prize,
it's fun.
Praise and reward. If you teach it as a game, like, hey, guess what? Let's play this game called prize. Okay, guess what you're going to get? I'm going to put this list down. I got these little stars, and I'm going to put a star by your name. Now, for some reason, if you don't get a star, then guess what? You don't get to go to Dave and Buster. Okay, there's so many different ways that you can make things fun instead of making a demand, a command, or so you have to go back and forth with your kids constantly saying what you're not doing. But I think, again, that we as people should teach our children how to do everything. Multitask with children, have multitaskful lives.
Absolutely.
And not be pivoted, oh, oh, you got to wash the dishes because you're a female, or you have to rake the yard because you're a boy.
Yeah.
No, everybody
had to do everything.
Around the house, yeah. In the house, in whatever. I teach them how to wash clothes. I mean, you know, I'm just saying, and I mean, I am a person that did that, so I'm just speaking, this is just my opinion. When I raised my children, I raised them to do everything, how to take care of themselves, how to cook at the early ages of 8 years old.
Mm.
And so not everybody is a decent cook, okay? They can cook it for their families, and then they know how to do what they eat, and you start them off early.
Yeah.
Ain't nothing wrong with telling a four-year-old, get a toy box. Okay, you don't play with your toys? Please put your toys back in.
Right.
Oh, good. You did a, thank you. And clap and praise them. Yay. You did a great job. When you start raising your kids at the earliest age, you ain't got to worry about reprimanding them and telling them they're not good enough.
Right.
You got to keep going, falling behind them over and over and over again because you're teaching them how to be self-sufficient.
Yeah.
And when you teach a child how to be self-sufficient, guess what it's going to do? It's going to create a self-sufficient atmosphere. That atmosphere is going to go into their self-sufficient children. Okay, then life does happen, okay? We know that they're not self-sufficient people in the world. So when they experience something that's not self-sufficient, they're going to know, wait a minute, that's not right. I need to do this because that's what mommy and daddy said. That means you don't head off society about being dysfunctional.
Yeah.
And even if it comes to them as a relationship, because we know self-sufficient people get involved with people that may not be self-sufficient.
Yeah.
All right? So what's going to happen in that area? For clash, because they're going to realize, oh, you like to clean up, and I don't. Okay, all right, so here's the problem. Your girlfriend, boyfriend, husband's going to be leaving their clothes, or vice versa, your wife, your girlfriend or whatever is going to be leaving their clothes all over the place, leaving dishes in the sink constantly for you to clean up. Is that going to be a problem? Absolutely. So the best way to handle that, again, make it a fun game. Guess what? We're going to have clean up night. Guess what? Oh, the party's at the house. Let's all clean up.
Clean up party.
Make it a game. We're going to have a party. It's going to be clean up the house. Clean up the house, okay? We're going to order pizza. We're going to have a drink, so whatever we need to do. You know what I'm saying? And we're all going to do it together. That way I don't have to tell you to do this and to do that constantly because it seems like you think it's all about me telling you what to do. How about I help you do it? How about we all do it at one time? We can have clean up Saturday. How about that?
Yeah.
Clean up Saturday.
Yeah.
You know, it's
Make
always
it fun.
A way to do things.
Yes.
And I call it... For those who are listening that have issues with family members or children that you feel they're not listening to you, we call it to, you know, come to Jesus meeting, okay? All right? So, you know, sit down. Have everybody sit down. Say, hey, when do you have time? Can you have any? I just need an hour of your time, just an hour out of your week, out of whatever. Just give me an hour. Let me know what day works for you. You go to each person you ask that. You know, sometimes we tell a kid, oh, you got to be here. I need you to know to say, hey, you know, you free? You know, ask for permission. And, you know, when you start being polite, start asking instead of telling and commanding, you'll notice a change in your child.
Right. You got to show them.
It doesn't make them feel that they're always being told what to do.
Right.
Right? And then it kills off that codependency.
Yeah.
Then they say, well, do you make it? They'll say, well, Mom, I got homework. I got band practice. I can't be there. Okay, well, baby, tell me when you're available. When are you available? All right. Is Sunday a good time for you? Okay, great. All right, so guess what? We'll take a vote. Is Sunday today? Let's do this. Okay, we're going to all talk about our feelings. Ooh, I had all this stuff going on at the job, y'all. I just want to let y'all know. I'm not even going to talk about what you did because I saw something you did wrong. But I want to see if you recognize
what you did
wrong.
Right, right.
And then that's how you do this on a regular, because that's what we don't do, because we're in this techie world.
Right.
That you look at your telephone, and you got your kids looking at their phone. Everybody texting. So we don't have no interacting with each other. So when you are having a bad moment in your life, I don't even know it.
Mm. Well, that's that last thing. But let me take a caller, and then we'll talk about it, because that's the last thing on the list.
We got 10 minutes.
Is that overly technical
non-communicative family. Let's go to 312-671. Give us your name, where you're calling from for our audience, and your question to Dr. Debbie.
We are in Yah Shalom, Assalamu Alaikum, and
yes, our dear friend Minister Plump. Yes,
Minister Plump in Chicago. Yes, well, I appreciate, the fact that different strokes for different folks, and everybody's different. However, I have this question for Dr. Debbie, because I know that Dr. Debbie Green is a genius, and I'm so glad that she's on the Female Solution with you. And I know that, you know what I mean? Sister Naima Latif, you're a genius too. The whole cast, you know, the whole program is fantastic. And I want to just say thank you, Dr. Debbie Green, for PTSDS. Now, maybe you haven't heard of PTDS, but all of those alphabets comes with a number. And it equals to Negro, whether people know it or not. That's a slave mentality, even a dead mentality. And I wanted to know what you think about what I just said. There has a number that goes with that, too. And both of them is 22, which means like deuces are wild. But my mother, my grandmother, they all put something on me. And I learned how to do whatever they said do. And they do it without any, stress, because they taught me really success. And my question is, did you know that PTSDS equals to 22 and Negro equals to 22? That can go to either one of you all. I'm going to prove to you that, money also equals to 22. And this is why they had the slave mentality for the Negro people was because we was valuable. We was money all the time to the slave trade. And as a result, we had a problem for 400 plus years. And I know that you all are part of the solution. And I want to, after they give me the comments on PTSDS, which is post-traumatic stress syndrome, something that, you know, we need to correct. In other words, that PTSDS is something that's wrong, okay? And then the Negro philosophy or concepts from slavery was wrong. And so I'm thinking that positive PMA, positive mental attitude, you have to change the wrong to right. And that's the whole question, too. And then I have an announcement after you answer the question. Thank you.
Okay, well, hold that thought, and we'll answer that question. You know, I've even heard PTSD spoken of as post-traumatic slave disorder by people who are talking about the trauma of the slave experience. Mm-hmm. And, of course, post-traumatic stress disorder, you know, when you're constantly battling and you're just overwhelmed with the memories of the trauma of whatever stressful event. But, you know, Dr. Debbie, I tend to think that we keep recycling past traumas and staying in a state of distress instead of addressing it in a healthy manner and letting it go. And so that's why it remains that state of PTSD. We don't know how to handle the stressful memory in a way that would restore us to peace. So what do you think needs to be done with that?
Well, one thing about his post-traumatic stress syndrome that he's referring to is the reactment of the memory causing the body to go under stress and producing stress hormones, okay? So stress hormones are those things called adrenaline, as well as the overindulgence of the nervous system then comes and reacts to not just the memory, but also the feelings in the body. You see what I'm saying? And the only thing that I know that just from past treatments that I've been actually helping and assisting my clients and also patients that deal with PTSD is the 45-second rule. The 45-second rule is that, now mind you, now we know that post-traumatic stress syndrome can occur when one is asleep as well, mm-hmm. because the subconscious doesn't sleep nor does it slumber. You see what I'm saying? So actively, if your eyes are wide open and you're having what they call a daymare, because that's what that means.
A nightmare.
When you're having a daymare, then immediately your body starts to feel it before your mind starts to think it, because it's a very close-knitted type of thing. So actively, the 45-second rule is immediately upon feeling those actions, you have to shift your mind. The best thing to do is alter the mind as quickly as possible through the senses. I don't care if holding a piece of ice in the middle of your hand. Mm. If you are awake, you hold that ice in your hand, and then when that thought hits your mind, you immediately focus on the ice. When you focus on the ice, because you can't help but focus on it, because you're going to feel something. You're going to feel the pain sensation or the discomfort in your hand from holding the ice, and the brain is then shift into feeling that sensation, then to actually go back into that daymare. It cuts it off. It blocks it. And you do this on an everyday level. Every time you experience this, you are redirecting the brain.
Mm.
You're redirecting the brain. So I'm just saying you do that with the ice, or you could use a rubber band or something to pop yourself. But ice is the most effective, you know, because it really demands your attention immediately. And as you do that, you'll know that you're redirecting the brain, and then there's going to be times that you're not going to have to do it. The brain will redirect itself when you do it on a regular basis, such as at least, you know, I would say if you have 21 times that you were triggered, you keep doing it within a 21-day radius every time that you are triggered, and that's when the brain will redirect itself, because it just needs a new pathway. It needs a new network. Now, some psychologists psychologists may not agree with me. They think PTSD is permanent, but I'm just telling you what I've worked with clients, and I've seen them, and they did that pattern, and they noticed less occurrence of triggers versus multiple trigger times.
Mm. Well, that certainly makes sense. Well, I know we're about to wrap up now. Just one quick question, this last point on the list, which was something that's very common. If everybody in the family is always on their phone, no one speaks to each other, even at mealtimes, everybody's into their electronics, and there is no conversation in the household, is that a healthy, normal atmosphere?
No, it's not. I guess all the questions you ever asked me. No, it is not, because it takes away from the relationship bond of the family. And and now we become people who are tapping into devices, and the love is waxed cold.
Yeah.
We love the phone, then we love mama, daddy, sister, brother.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? And we're teaching our children the same thing. So no, ma'am, it is not. It is not, because, again, if you don't have a weekly meeting with your family, or if you don't have a daily family, go to your family, go to the room of your child, sit down on the bed and say, hey, how are you doing? Instead of texting them, oh, how you doing? Dinner is ready. No.
Right.
You need to let them hear you. Let them hear your voice. Let them feel the love. Let them feel your embrace. Tell them you love them. Hug them. Because one day you will not be able to do that.
Right.
So it's so important that you don't destroy the fabric of your life. Thank you, YouTube. Watch this channel. Please subscribe and keep us posted. We are here every Thursday with some wonderful knowledge. I know a million things are happening on YouTube, but this is one that definitely is needed. Thank you, Naima, for always being there. You know what I'm saying? I don't tell you thank you all, but you are just a joy to me. Thank you, Facebook, for watching. Thank you, Faith. It doesn't matter. It's one to a million. Hey, all is valuable to me. Thank you, everyone that was listening on Blog Talk, and I hope that we said something to help you. along the way of life.
Yes.
And you have a blessed week.
Yes.
Until next time.
This is definitely my weekly therapy session.
We've come to the end of our show today, but you can hear every show in the archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. You can also hear today's show on the Female Solution Facebook page. Go to www.facebook.com/the-female-solution. Leave your comments about today's show. You can always reach me on my website at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. Watch our TV shows, listen to our radio shows, order our books, and be sure to get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to thank all of you who participated in today's discussion. And to our global family listening from all around the world, we say thank you. To our family in China, Sheshe. India, Zanyaba. Japan, Arigato. Korea, Kamsahamnida. Russia, Spasiba. Germany, Danke. Poland, Dziękuję. France, Merci. Spain, gracias. Italy, grazie. Egypt, shukran. Ghana, merci. Nigeria, eshe. South Africa, ngiyabonga. Senegal, geret. Kenya, asante. Israel, toda. Pakistan, shukriya. Afghanistan, Tashakur. Saudi Arabia, shukran. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you. And may peace be upon you and the mercy of God and God's blessing.